Welcome to the Announcer's Journal. I'm your host, Todd Harris. Very excited to get this project up and running. We'll be speaking with play-by-play announcers, analysts, as well as sideline reporters about some of the greatest and most memorable games and events they have been a part of, while at the same time giving you a sense of what it was like to not only be there, but some of the behind-the-scenes events that made the game so memorable. Today we're speaking with NFL Hall of Famer Dan Fouts, inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame in 1993 and a member of the NFL's 1980s All-Decade Team. Born in San Francisco, played for the University of Oregon Ducks in the Pac-8, where he set 19 school records, and he was inducted into the U of O Hall of Fame in 1992. And he is the son of legendary Bay Area Radio Hall of Famer Bob Fouts, and one of the few announcers that has been both a play-by-play announcer as well as a color analyst. Dan, welcome to the Announcer's Journal. From the 1982 Epic in Miami to the Freezer Bowl, which was the following week in Cincinnati, you've been at some great games. But I want to talk to you about the 2006 Rose Bowl game, the national championship between number one USC and number two Texas, played, of course, on January 4th, Mac Brown versus Pete Carroll, Matt Leinart versus Vince Young. So much talent on that field. And, of course, it was also your partner Keith Jackson's last call.
Yeah, that was probably the saddest thing about that game, because it was such a great game and such a great call by Keith. But knowing that it was going to be his last broadcast, we all felt a little melancholy about it, I believe. And then, you know, sitting around after the game, and he was so kind to bring a case of wine for the boys and girls in the tent afterwards, and just sat there, regaled us with some stories. And you know, the thing about Keith is that he just attracted so many people,
right.
And people loved him from, you know, every walks of life. So for him to have that game to go out on and to be on top of that game as he was, I've watched the game a couple of times in the last couple of years and just marveled at the job he did.
Yeah, it was amazing. They just re-aired that national championship game a short time ago, and the ratings for that game when it was live back then, the day in 06, 21.7 rating, almost 36 million viewers. And that was the last Rose Bowl game under the ABC Sports branding. So as I think back of our weekends together, as we were kind of the traveling circus, do you remember when exactly, a question I get a lot, when Keith decided that this was going to be it?
You know, I don't know exactly. I do remember him telling me in all his wisdom when he did let me know that he was going to retire at some point during that season. He says, you know, Fauci, after you retire, there's only one big event left. and of course, we chuckled about that. And I said, well, don't retire then. And he says, well, it's time. I got to go.
Yeah, absolute best. And you know, I think the most one of the most iconic calls, I mean, you were right next to him when Vince Young scrambled for that winning touchdown, and he did it so simply and just basically, he's got it.
Yeah, and he set it up so well too, because it was fourth down, goal to go, and the Longhorns needed a touchdown. And he basically said, fourth down, this is it for the national title. And as you know, as the play's unfolding, all he said was, he's going for the corner. And as you just said, Keith said, he's got it.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It was perfect.
As you look back on that game, you know, the buildup that we did and the preparation, USC came in with a 34-game win streak. Texas had a 19-game win streak coming in and had won the Rose Bowl the year before, obviously beating Michigan. But it was Texas that led at the half 16-10. At what point in the game, Dan, did you say, man, Texas may have too much for the Trojans in this one?
Well, I thought that, you know, with Vince Young, he was too much for anybody. You just mentioned the Michigan game the year
right
before. He scored four times mm-hmm. on the ground in that game, all standing up against Michigan. And, you know, in talking to Pete Carroll before the Rose Bowl game, I asked him about that. And he says, well, you know, he obviously is a problem. He's faster than our defensive backs. He's as big as our defensive linemen, and he's stronger than our linebackers. And I said, well, what else have you got? And he says, I don't know. That's about it. We're going to try to change things up as much as possible. But in the end, Carroll decided to go with defensive backs,
right,
and play pass defense. And then he decided to blitz Young with these smaller defensive backs. Well, obviously it didn't work. Young outraced everybody to the corner of the end zone to win the game and the title.
You know, what's funny is I think about that being on the sideline for USC. That was the side I was assigned to. I remember Lendale White coming off, and I think it was about 6.5 minutes or so to play when USC had a 12-point lead. And I remember Lendale saying something like, those boys from Texas need to get in the weight room. And I thought, well, surely he can't be talking about Vince Young because he doesn't need any more muscle. That kid is just built so well. But what do you think the difference was coming down the stretch that USC obviously couldn't stop Vince Young or couldn't get those last 2 yards they needed on that critical fourth down?
Well, that was an interesting call that on that fourth down, because you know, a lot of speculation as to why Reggie Bush wasn't in the game. Lendale was. But Lendale had a heck of a game, you know, a couple touchdowns, and he appeared to be unstoppable at times. But, you know, on a fourth down, I think you need more than just a blast play right up the middle with a Lendale White. I mean, you get Reggie on the perimeter with some help out there. And you know, I would like to have seen him in the game at that time, but that wasn't to be. But getting back to, you know, your question about how Texas could come back from being down 12, you know, remember, they felt that they were the best team in the nation.
Right.
And they had, you know, had a great season. And SC, obviously, you talked about the 34-game winning streak. So in both teams' minds, you know, they felt that they could, regardless of what the score was, come back from, as SC did at the end of the first half, into the second half, and then Texas at the end. But because both teams believed that they were the better team.
It's interesting. You look at the stats from that game. USC converted 57% on third down to Texas's 27%. But when it mattered the most, USC unable to get those 2 yards, which really, do you think if Lendale White gets that first down, USC wins the game?
No question. At the time, they would have been able to run out the clock and then punt it deep into Texas territory. So, yeah, obviously making that first down would have been critical for SC. But, you know, you talked about third down conversions, and then you talk about the fourth down failure. Well, remember the winning play, what came on a fourth down for Texas.
When you look back at that game, the talent that was on the field, the amount of Heisman Trophy winners and the quarterbacks and the coaches and the tailbacks and the defense, and the amount of players that converted not only a great college ability, but they able to play in the NFL, the next level. Is that the most, I don't say star-studded game you've ever been a part of?
Yeah, I think I'd have to say that. I mean, obviously it's the greatest game I've ever been a part of. And then you talked about the talent on the field. I have in my office a photograph of the kickoff of that game. Mm-hmm. And it was sent to me by our statistician, Mark Amento. And he sent one to Keith as well. And it's a huge photograph, and it's a panorama.
Yeah, it's a big panorama one. I got one as well. It's beautiful.
It's spectacular. It even has the blimp in it and the sun reflects it. So but the only thing you can't see, and I can see you in it because I had to bring out my magnifying glass. The booth was dark and you can't see Keith and me in the booth or any of our help up there. So it's an ironic photo in that respect.
Talking with Hall of Famer Dan Fouts about the 2006 Rose Bowl game, the national championship between USC and Texas. Dan, when we talk about the preparation we made, I mean, when those games, you think about, we get down there usually 4 or 5 days before and all the meetings and the coaches and the players. And I remember Keith used to get a little bit restless with all the, you know, production meetings and the interviews. He wanted to get to the game. What stands out in your mind in the preparation for that game that you remember most?
Well, it really has little to do with the days leading up to it. It had more to do with the actual pregame. As everybody can, you know, think about Keith and the number of people that want to see him and meet him before a game.
Right.
And now this is going to be his last game. This is going to be for the national title. this is the Rose Bowl. You can imagine the line of people outside our booth 2 hours before a kickoff. And we had a very intricate, as you know, Todd, opening to the show.
Yeah.
A lot of elements in it. And so, you know, I'm getting a little antsy too. And this line keeps coming and keeps coming, and Keith is holding court, and people literally, they're seeing the Pope. They want to kiss his ring and the whole bit. And I'm starting to look over at Keith, and I'm giving him shaking my papers and getting eye contact from him, and he's ignoring me. And he's talking to this one guy, and he's on and on and on talking to this one guy, this is the last guy. And finally, the guy leaves without saying hi to me or anything. He just shakes Keith's hand and walks out of the booth. And Keith says, "Fauci?" I said, "What?" He says, "Do you know who that was?" And I said, "No, Keith, frankly, I don't give a damn. And we've got work to do. Let's get to work." And he says, "Well, you should know who he is." I said, "Why is that, Keith?" He says, "Well, that's your boss. That's Bob Iger."
Oh, just casual like that.
No wonder I got fired later on.
Oh, that's so classic, because you captured it perfectly, because the amount of people that would want to visit with Keith, whether we were in Pullman, Washington or Tucson or at the Rose Bowl, there was always someone there that had a connection with Keith. And it didn't matter if it was an old athletic director, an old coach, a professor. They wanted to come in and bring their family and see Keith. And I just felt like we were, the traveling circus. And Keith, certainly, you're right. He was the Pope, and everyone wanted to kiss the ring.
Well, we laughed about that quite a bit afterwards. But the thing is, nobody was more beloved and more respected than Keith Jackson.
Yeah. Hey, getting back to the game and your call, you are one of the few announcers that I know that has done play-by-play as well as be a color analyst. Was that hard for you to make a transition back and forth? And obviously, when you're working with Keith, everyone knows who the lead dog is. But what did you learn, lessons you learned, or how to be a better play-by-play announcer?
Well, I wish I'd learned more. I'd probably still be doing it. But, there were times when I first started working with Keith where I would just listen. Mm-hmm. And he would look at me and say, "Well, are you going to say something?" And I'd have to remind myself that I'm supposed to talk at times too. But he's such a, cadence.
Right.
You just can't imitate it. You can only learn about preparation and how important that is, and knowing, to keep. I remember one time I had dropped my notes, and I had to pick them up off the floor as I was talking. And Keith told me afterwards during the commercial break that you got to keep a good grip on your notes, Fauci. And I said, "No kid, Keith. I didn't mean to drop them, but." He was all about, being the perfectionist that he was.
Yeah. You've also had opportunity to work with guys like Brett Musburger and Vern Lundquist. And I guess a big question for calling big games is, what makes each of those announcers special that you have worked with, and lessons that you learned from them?
Well, you got to throw in Al Michaels there,
yeah.
Dick Enberg, Ian Eagle. All these guys, and again, it goes back to preparation, but then it's their experience and not getting in the way of the game and letting the game, be the most important thing, and then adding to it, informing people, educating people, entertaining people. I think those are the key things for not only a play-by-play guy, but for an analyst as well, is to not distract. Don't take away from the game. Add to it.
And that's a perfect transition. As we were talking about the 2006 Rose Bowl game, the national championship, the BCS, USC versus #2 Texas. When Texas got the ball for the final time, there was a timeout before. Did you and Keith talk about approach, or you guys had been together for 6 years prior, so you didn't need to talk about it?
No, with Keith, it was just follow the leader, really.
Right.
And also the game is the co-leader, if you will. To me, that's the best part of any football game, or the last 2 minutes of the first half, or obviously the last couple of minutes of the ball game itself. And then, you think about strategies. You think about, you know, what a defense is going to do, what an offense is going to do. And as an analyst, you're looking for personnel. You're looking for formations. You know, what is the thinking going in based upon your research and your preparation in talking to players and talking to coaches, and just getting a feel, hopefully, for what is going to happen. And then once it does happen, being able to communicate with the truck exactly what type of replay you want to come back to make your point, to really solidify what's important for the viewer to see and to hear at that moment.
When Texas gets the ball, as you pointed out, and just a few minutes left, I think they had one timeout. I think they got the ball around the 35. Was there any doubt in your mind that they were going to win the game and Vince Young was going to score a winning touchdown to give them the national championship?
Oh, you know, I could say, you know, obviously, no, I knew it all along. I really didn't really think about that. I was more concerned with, you know, I mean, gosh, they got no pass rush on him.
And right.
If you can't bring a quarterback down, and that's what, as a player, I always remember that some of your best pass protection and the more time you have to throw is in those situations. Defensive linemen don't want to jump offside, so that sometimes they're a little bit late off the ball. They don't want to, you know, hit the quarterback late to get a 15-yard penalty. So their pass rush is more of a contained type of pass rush. And when you've got a guy that can run like Vince Young, you better be thinking contained. So I knew that he'd get time to throw. He did get time to throw, and that allowed his receivers to make some plays down the field and move the ball down.
I guess the question I would have as a fan is, why do you think Vince Young's skill set, as dominant as it was in college, didn't translate into the NFL?
Well, I think the story is really well known, and he said it himself, basically, is that he really didn't work at it. And in the NFL, it's 24/7. There's no time off, especially if you're a quarterback, and especially if you're trying to, you know, get your team to win some ball games. So, you know, he had a good start there in Tennessee for a while.
Right.
I just think that from hearing stories that Vince has talked about his ill-fated career, that he realized that he didn't work hard enough at it. And even with all that talent, you know, that next level, there's a lot of guys with talent, and there's a lot of guys with speed and size. And you're not playing college anymore. You're playing with the big boys, and you've got to match their work ethic or surpass it, especially if you're a quarterback.
And I guess I'd ask the same question, maybe to a lesser extent, with Reggie Bush. I mean, for me, for all the years we've spent out covering the Pac-10, Reggie Bush maybe was one of the most electrifying backs I'd ever seen. And being able to be on the ground level and see him up close and personal, I was just amazed by what he could do. It's like he could dodge anyone he wanted to. He always had an extra gear. He was amazing to watch. Why do you think, same question, he didn't translate as well in the NFL?
Well, I think that, you know, number one, I think he had a couple of injuries, and he bounced around to a couple. He did put up some pretty impressive numbers at times, but, you know, not Hall of Fame numbers, obviously, that you might have expected, seeing how well he did in college. But again, the level is entirely different when you step up to the NFL.
Who, in your mind, greatest player of all time, if you had to pick someone both in college and in the NFL, that was just so beyond everyone else and just such a dominant force, who would you put in that conversation?
Well, I think the popular ones in the NFL, obviously, you start with Jim Brown, and maybe you go to Jerry Rice just because of the, you know, the numbers that they put up. And I mean, Jim Brown was unstoppable, you know, as a big fullback, averaging 5 yards a carry, and the things he did. And, you know, Jerry Rice's numbers, they may be topped, but I don't know if anybody will ever play as long as Rice did. It's pretty remarkable, the number of years that he put in. You know, as far as quarterbacks, everybody wants to talk about who the greatest quarterback of all time is. And really what that comes down to is really a debate among, you know, guys that pick their favorites.
Yeah.
My favorite is Johnny Unitas. And I think that what he did really transformed the game. There's a lot of things that, not only winning titles, but also, the three-step drop, the five-step drop, the timing routes with Raymond Berry, the hurry-up offense. None of those things were being done before Unitas, and now everybody's doing them. So, people say Montana with the success he had, and obviously a popular choice these days is Tom Brady. And you can argue on all of them and say that they're the greatest, and you'd be right. But it really comes down to your favorite.
I'd throw Dan Fouts into that conversation. Air Coryell.
Well, a lot of people throw right back at you.
Is it true that you never operated out of the shotgun?
I think I did once or twice after Coryell was gone. And it was an experiment, basically. It was okay, but I like being under center. There's a lot of things you can do when you're under center that you can't do from shotgun. And a lot of our passing game was time-oriented.
Right.
The drop related to the depth of the receiver and things like that. And as you're dropping back to pass, there's a in the defensive back's minds, especially the safeties, they're not sure where you're going with the ball because you can look right, you can look left, you can stare right at them. You can create some type of doubt in their mind as to where you're going with the ball. And you can also maneuver them as much as you want at times. So, and you can do all of that as you're dropping back to pass, which you can't do really from the shotgun.
When was the last time you threw a football with any intention?
intention or completion?
Both.
Well, all I know is my last pass was intercepted, so I won't even answer that question.
Well, for the folks listening, I remember being at the University of Washington one time, and we were out there, I think, waiting for interviews or something, and you picked up a ball and threw it to me. And I remember my hand hurt for about 3 days after that, but I played it off like, that's not a big deal. And you had some zip on the ball back in the day.
Well, it's funny because, when quarterbacks warm up, you see them soft tossing and lobbing and everything. But when I would play catch with Unitas, his first pass would have that zip. And, you're only 10, 15 yards
right.
apart. And so I thought that was the way you're supposed to warm up. I mean, why throw it soft? You're only throwing it 10 yards or so. So put a little zip on it. And then the other part of that, and you're lucky that you used your hands to catch that fast, Todd, because Bill Walsh taught me that when you're warming up, always have a target on your receiver. Just don't throw the ball. Throw it with meaning. Throw it with purpose. And so the target that he always told me to have is a guy's nose. And he said, this will force them two things. It'll force them to keep their eye on the ball and to catch the ball with their hands. Because if they don't, you're going to break their nose. And so it made you a better thrower because you had a target. And it made them a better receiver because they used their hands to catch the ball.
And I remember you used to always say, hey, if you can get your hand on it, you should be able to catch it.
Well, you tell that to everybody, and luckily I had guys like John Jefferson and Wes Chandler and Kellen Winslow and Charlie Joyner that could do that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that couldn't catch it one-handed.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the 1982 epic in Miami. We've talked about the Rose Bowl tonight, one of the great games. That epic in Miami, I think a lot of people from my age remember that game so clearly. What is your greatest takeaway from that game, not only the win, but just the memory of being in Miami and the heat that night and the victory and the way you guys played?
Yeah, there's just so many memories that come back when you think about it. I mean, it started in the daylight and it ended in darkness.
Yep.
And we played better in the daylight, I guess, because we were up 24 to nothing. But it was a great effort by both teams. And I thought Don Strock was fabulous, and
yeah.
I were drafted the same year. So I was kind of pulling for him throughout his career, but I never expected him to put on such a performance as he did that night. But, the one outstanding memory that I have is really on our last drive when I hit really basically just two passes, one to Wes Chandler, then one to Charlie Joyner, and both of them were pretty long passes, and both of them resulted in both players being knocked out of the game because of big hits by the Dolphins. So we were down to really nobody. We had to kick the field goal at that time because Winslow was wasted.
Yeah.
And he couldn't play anymore. So, but the pass protection on those two pass plays, I mean, I had like 4 or 5 seconds on both of them And because of that, it's that thing I was talking about earlier. End of the game, guys, defensive guys are fatigued. They're not rushing as hard, and you can move the ball. And that's exactly what happened and got us into range for Bernerska to make the winning field goal.
And then a week later, you go to Cincinnati, and it's a, I didn't realize this, a 92-degree drop in temperatures from what you played in Miami.
So why'd you bring it up?
I just know how much you love playing in cold weather.
That wasn't cold weather. That was unbelievably cold.
Oh, man.
You got to, you know, I said this a million times about that game. You got to give credit to the Bengals, and you got to give credit to Kenny Anderson, their great quarterback, yeah, who played flawlessly that day, and I did not.
Mother Nature gets some credit too, because that was some frigid stuff.
Yeah, they said it was, you know, I remember waking up that morning and turning on the radio having the announcer say it's bitter cold outside today. If you have no business going outside, do not go outside.
And you had business. Well, before we let you go, we'll bring it back to the 2006 Rose Bowl game, the national championship between number one USC and number two Texas. It's a big debate, and I know a lot of networks love debate. In your mind, greatest college football game of all time?
Well, again, it's a debate. I mean, and obviously there have been, you know, over 100 years of college football and some great, great games. I just think that the combination of the number one and number two, add that to playing for a national title, add that to playing in the Rose Bowl, and add that to the legendary Keith Jackson's last broadcast, it'd be tough to match all of those elements.
Yeah, little known fact, that was Texas's 800th win in their program history. It got them the national championship. And as you said, Keith Jackson on the call for the final time. It was awesome. Dan Fouts, NFL Hall of Famer, thank you for joining us here on the Announcer's Journal. We appreciate your time, and get that arm loosened up. I might have to swing on up to Oregon one time and play a little catch with you.
Great being with you, Skippy.
Thanks, Foutsy.
All right, buddy.
Thanks again.
My thanks to NFL Hall of Famer Dan Fouts for his insights on what many consider to be the greatest college football game of all time. And we'll be back with another edition of the Announcer's Journal next week. Until then, I'm your host, Todd Harris, saying stay healthy and happy.